Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
From KYW News Radio 103.9 FM, this is Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you. Presented by Gift of Life Donor Program. Register as an organ donor at donorsone.org.
Hello, I'm Raquel Williams. Welcome to Bridging Philly. This week, we're turning the show over to Sharon Day Howard as we celebrate America's 250th anniversary at some of Philadelphia's most historic spots. Shara in the City 250 edition features fun and little-known details about Alfred's Alley in Old City.
Some of the earliest houses were made in like 1730.
The Tun, which was one of America's first taverns.
It was the birthplace for many organizations, including the United States Marine Corps.
And the Franklin Library, where some of the nation's most historical documents are housed.
Our museum has about 3,000 objects in it.
Get ready for a fabulous, historic, and patriotic jaunt around the birthplace of America. We start our Shara in the City America 250 edition at one of the country's oldest continuously inhabited residential streets, Alfred's Alley in Old City. Shara Day Howard visited some of the people who live on the tourist destination block to get a peek at modern life inside the 16th and 17th century homes.
This week on Shara in the City, we're heading to Alfred's Alley, the nation's oldest continuously inhabited residential street, with preserved homes from the 18th and 19th centuries that tell the story of an earlier American working class life. It truly is like a living and breathing museum. People actually still live here, and we're going to visit them today. Let's go. So we're actually right at the corner. I'm going to go hang out with my friend Maddie. She's going to give us the understanding of really what's happening today.
Hi. Hi, nice to meet
what's
you.
What's your name?
My name is Maddie Gallen, and I'm a board member for Alfred's Alley Association.
So what is happening today?
Today is Fete Day. It's Alfred's Alley's official day where we celebrate the alley. We talk about the residents who lived here and the residents who are here today. Residents will open their houses up, we'll have living history demonstrations, and everything preserves the alley for future generations.
Thank you. Jen, Scott, and Tom. Now, what are your titles officially?
We are volunteer fambassadors.
And why is it so important for you all to be here today? We'll start with you and then we'll head down.
You know, as a fambassador, our love of the city is what it's all about. So being able to represent and volunteer at such an important part of the city like Alfred's Alley brought us out today.
And it's 250, of course. This is really important. So, Jan?
Yeah, it's just amazing that all the things that the city is doing for 250. Being part of the fambassadors really gets the word out there.
You know, the alley was open in 1702, and this, known as Fete Day, has been going on for 92 years.
92 years.
So it fits
years.
In perfectly with the 250 celebration.
I mean, like a button.
It does. Yeah.
All right. Alicia is here in line. It's a hot day, but...
We are here with a party of eight today out traveling. And I think just the sense of history and seeing something that's been around for so long, especially for a whole bunch of teenagers and kids to be able to appreciate all the history that came before them. And
yeah, Education Station. What's your name?
McKenna.
All right, McKenna. How old are you?
13.
13 and?
Keaton.
And?
Farah.
And?
Riley.
All right, so this is the brood.
I think learning about the past is very important so we don't repeat it.
It's interesting to learn about like one of the oldest still inhabited streets in America. It's cool.
And ding, ding, now it's time for the tour. Maddie's going to introduce me to some really important people who are going to help me out a bit.
These are my fellow board members. This is Susan, and this is Nicole.
Hey, Susan.
Hi. I'm right. Vice President of the Board of Directors, and I'm also a resident.
I'm Nicole Sarnes, and I'm on the board, and I'm a resident.
All right, let's do it. So what are we looking at?
So this is Alfred's Alley. It was established in 1703. Some of the earliest houses were made in like 1730 up until about 1810. So these are some of the houses. The first one on the block is 134, and it's the half house. The entire width across is, I think, about 9 feet. You could reach out your hands. And then you also have some vendors and then costume people, carolers, a fortune teller.
These what is this?
The costume room over here, which has the colonial costumes.
I'm Suzanne. I'm the resident Mantua maker here at Alfred's Alley.
I love it.
And a mantua maker is a dressmaker. So normally I am sitting here making garments from roughly about the 1750s through the 1780s because of the Revolutionary War. Big birthday this year. The first pair bought the house here in 1762. And the last mantua maker, Elizabeth, she was here until the 1810s. So it's about 50 years of dressmaking happening in this house.
I love it. And you know people are going to ask, Bridgerton, what's the connection? Bridgerton, I see it in this.
Bridgerton is a little bit later. So when people come in, I'm like, you know what, Bridgerton? It's not historically accurate at all, but it doesn't matter because it's so fun and it gets people excited. And then sometimes lights the spark.
You're amazing.
Bye.
Bye. All right. So what's next?
We can go into the museum.
You know, it's not a spot without a gift shop.
Yes.
So what was the space before it was a gift shop? It has been so many things. It has been different workshops. There was a Windsor chair maker who lived here, a cabinet maker who lived here. And these front rooms would often be shops.
So we're a bread maker.
And a bread maker. So we're actually keeping up that tradition by having the shop right here in the front room. It's like alley residents used to.
This is the backyard garden at the museum. One of our residents helps like maintain the garden and all the aspects of it. We have some like fruit trees, we've got herbs, things that would be around, and just informational signs so that people can read about the alley and the area we own. So we own both these two houses, the one you saw with the costume and the museum and the gift shop. So every time somebody makes a donation, any proceeds, ticket sales, it all goes to maintaining this museum on the alley.
So help them out, folks. Come and visit.
Yes.
All right.
So I love the little walkway. It's from the alley to the backyard of the garden. The main attraction is being able to go inside the residents' houses. Some people keep it very historic and colonial accurate. Some people renovated the whole thing. So it's just interesting to see what they really look like on the inside. I want to show you Bladen's Court.
All right, let's do
it. Yeah. So this is such a cool spot on the alley. These houses used to face only Front Street. And I think around 1760, I could be lying. We'll see in a second. They decided they wanted access to their backyards.
Wow.
So they paid the city of Philadelphia to put this secondary alley in.
So it's just a bricked walkway with some stone slates?
Yes, and it gave access to all these houses for their backyards. So they now had access to walk in their house two ways. This is Susan's house from earlier.
Hey, Susan!
It was between 1749 and 1752 that they did this. And this is the original light post, and this is where they got their water.
Wow, so there's a wooden well with an actual lever. You know what I mean? The well may have run dry after 250 years.
It's just a quaint little spot off the alley with a lot of nature, trees.
Mm-hmm. Should we go into Susan's house?
We can do Susan's house.
Hi, guys. It's gorgeous. Tell us about the house.
The house dates back to the 1700s. We don't know about the exact date of the house. The house was owned by Benjamin Rush. Benjamin was a blacksmith, and Benjamin ran his business out of this building. And behind the house was truly an alleyway. And in that alleyway, not only did they have the public outhouse, they also had the public water supply.
Oh, that sounds sanitary.
That was one of the interesting things. They didn't get public plumbing in this house until the 1960s.
Bye. Thank you. All right, so where are we off to next?
Okay. But if we can see Sue and Rob's, they're the longest standing residents on the alley currently. They've been here over 50 years.
Oh, yeah, we have to do that.
Rob and Sue Cattell.
Oh, wow, look at this house.
Yes.
All right, and Rob.
We love it because there's a lot of original floors and woodwork and windows, you know, still here. It hasn't all been remodeled over the years. They've added plumbing and electricity, but...
Let us hope. And wow, an unexpected star of the hour. Introduce yourself, please.
My name is Kelly Elforth Christensen. I'm a direct descendant of Jeremiah Elforth. And we come down, or my family comes down. I've been down now 3 years in a row.
Do you know anything about your family's heritage here in the space?
I know that if you look back, how it was acquired, that the one Elforth married a woman and he inherited half the street, and she passed and married the sister and he inherited the rest of the street, and that's how he got it. But it was called Cherry Street. They didn't change it to Elforth Alley until the historic preservation was coming in the 1900s, and then they changed it to Elforth Alley back then. But now it's great because they've made it about all the current homeowners and all the people who have lived here, and not just about the Elforth family, because it's so much more than that.
That was such a wonderful surprise. And then I ran into Sue, Rob's wife, and she really just broke it down for me. What are these houses like at the core?
I'm Sue Cattell. Most of the houses here have two rooms. They might have had an original one room. We had
two rooms, and this was added in 1850. The house is 1797.
So the stairs are almost vertical. Going up.
They're all spiral, which is a great way to build a house. You save space. And these floors are all original to the house, and they came from red pine from New Jersey. I hear it's extinct at this moment. So come on in here. We have three fireplaces still that work.
Oh, it's beautiful. This is your bedroom?
Uh-huh. The Pountain Gouge is a colonial pattern, and we have it in all our fireplaces.
It's beautiful.
And we have the old tub with the feet.
I was going to ask you, so this tub, how far does it go back?
It's probably, I'm saying 1850. Uh-huh.
All right, third floor.
Here we go. Music room, and I play the banjo, can you tell?
Oh, I love it. And you play the banjo, so please, play us out.
Keep on a-walking, keep on a-talking, walking up to freedom land.
So if you haven't been to Elfrath's Alley, pay him a visit.
Yeah, come on down, Elfrath's Alley, and because I'd like to share.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment. Back to Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you.
Welcome back to Bridging Philly. We're celebrating America's 250th anniversary with a special All Shara in the City episode, visiting some of Philadelphia's hidden historic gems. The Tun was one of America's first taverns and the place where the U.S. Navy and Marine Corps got their start. It was torn down centuries ago, but two veterans are working to rebuild it. Shara Day Howard hears their story.
This week on Shara in the City, we're heading to 2nd Street to meet up with my friend George. He and his Marine buddy are honoring the birthplace of America's Navy and Marine Corps, the Tun. It was America's first tavern, also a restaurant, that happened to be one of the hangouts of George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, and even a well-known pirate. You can almost imagine them doing shots and getting into all kinds of trouble, right? Now, the original Tun was destroyed years ago to make way for progress, you know, roads, highways, etc. But these two guys have dreamed up a way to bring it all back, and they're sharing it with us today. Let's go. All right, they're supposed to be around here somewhere. I'm meeting them on 2nd Street, right off of Market. Up there's George. How you doing, George?
Fine, Shara. How are you doing? I'm George Leone. I'm the head of Homecoming 250 Navy Marine Corps that put on the national celebration of the Navy Marine Corps' 250th last year and is going to keep going, bringing the Navy Marine Corps back to Philadelphia in the future.
I love it. And this really is the home of the Navy and Marine Corps. And that's there's right. A specific place, right, called the Tun. Tell us about it.
Well, the Tun is a tavern that existed for almost as long as Philadelphia has existed. And it was the birthplace for many organizations, including the United States Marine Corps, and a place where the Navy got one of its starts.
Which leads me to why we're here on 2nd Street between Market and Walnut. George, tell us, why are we here?
We're here because of Pat's vision. I'm going to give him credit that we started out 5 years ago as for the Navy Marine Corps 250th, and we wanted to rebuild the Tun. After years of effort and searching, we located this property, and with many interested people who want the Tun to be recreated, he purchased this property. And so we're here. We're in the future site of the Tun.
Back to the future. It's okay. Amazing. And because, of course, the original space is really just on
I-95. Underneath the southbound lanes of I-95.
You had to find a new spot. And yeah. This happens to be probably the most realistic spot.
That's right. And it's a great neighborhood for it. This is Bar Central Philadelphia. So another bar will be a wonderful thing here. And it's very close to the original site. So I think Pat can be very pleased at his efforts to get it here. This is Pat Daly. He is the vice president of the Tun Legacy Foundation.
Well, hey there, Pat. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Ray, the man of the hour. Thanks for joining us today.
Ah, my pleasure. This is the entrance to what is now a parking lot. Tun Alley is actually where we are presently standing. Tun Alley originally was the place where William Penn stipulated that every Philadelphian needed free access to the river.
So tell us a little more about the Tun and what its significance is really here to the history of Philadelphia, to the history of America.
So the Tun was actually one of the very first taverns opened in Philadelphia after William Penn officially started, you know, the settlement.
That's pretty substantial.
It was actually two brothers who built the Tun, the Carpenter brothers. One, Samuel Carpenter, was a wealthy sugar merchant in Barbados. He came here about 6 months after William Penn did because he heard about this Quaker settlement. He was a Quaker himself. Sugar was the oil of its day back then, so it was the most valuable commodity. He decided, hearing about this new place in Philadelphia where you could be a Quaker openly, he decided to cash out and came to Philadelphia. William Penn having this new colony to develop was long on paper wealth and short on cash. He was allowed to purchase a pretty substantial piece of the waterfront of the Delaware River.
So where are we talking about exactly? Where they have an idea of Philly and the waterfront. Where was the Tun originally?
The Tun was just north of Walnut Street, south of Chestnut, but closer to Walnut than Chestnut, on the Delaware River, a place then called King Street, later called Water Street. There's nothing left of that now because 95 is there, but if you look at Water Street just north of the Ben Franklin Bridge, if you can find it, but Water Street was actually down on the river. The river is down where 95 is. Front Street sits at the top of a cliff. So they had this large beach down there, and that became Water Street. And that was the most prominent street in Philadelphia, almost the first 60, 70 years of Philadelphia's existence. So that was prime real estate.
Paint us a picture. What could you see on Water Street when the Tun was there?
It's very tight. It's only the width of one lane for a car. Back then it was horses and carriages.
When it was hustle and bustling.
The Tun was a mariner's tavern. So it was often the place where sometimes the first people set foot on land in America from Europe. The Tun was the first pier built into the Delaware. So the Tun was at the end of the pier. So it wasn't quite an Ellis Island, but it was certainly the first arrival place of a lot of immigrants to this country. Probably the most famous regular at the Tun was Benjamin Franklin. The Tun is recognized as the oldest Masonic lodge, the first Masonic lodge in North America.
So you see a lot of carriages, a lot of people. Who's walking and talking there?
Quite a few merchants. Samuel Carpenter, although he was a sugar merchant in Barbados, here he became a developer and a logistics expert. Built warehouses and a tavern at the ends. His brother Joshua was a master brewer, so he ran the tavern and actually ran it as a brewery. And became quite wealthy. He actually was one of the very first subscribers that raised the money to build Christ Church, which stands about a block north of here. I was a Marine officer myself, and you always hear Tun Tavern when you're in the Marine Corps. Everything is about the Marines being done in Tun Tavern, and every year it's reinforced because it's a big birthday celebration on every Marine base worldwide. And so I thought, you know, Marines come to Philadelphia now looking for this place. Philadelphians don't know why they're here, but they come by the thousands. So why not rebuild it? Why can't it be here? And that's what started all this 10, 12 years ago. This particular space is good because we border Black Horse Alley, which is a little, you know, 4 or 5 foot wide cobblestone alley next to our property that has been there since 1686, I believe, 1687. So it was here at the time of the Tun. It would have been a very short walk from the Tun to here.
So this is a literal upgrade.
This is an upgrade. Yeah, we're above the high water mark here. So I think we'll be all right from flooding.
Exactly. Tell us, what's the ETA here in terms of building it?
Well, we couldn't build exactly what we believe it looked like because it's way too small. You know, back then, Philadelphia had at most 25, 30,000 people, which was still the second largest city in the Western Hemisphere after London. But still, it wasn't that big of a on today's terms.
So where are you guys walking me over to?
So this is a sign in front of the space where the actual tavern will be built. Here facing 2nd Street, oriented exactly as it was when it was down on Water Street. The front of the tavern is facing west, the back of it's the river. The tavern will be approximately 50 feet long by 30 feet deep. If we were to build the Tun as we believe it looked, it'd probably only fit, by our architect's guesstimate, 82 people in it.
Yeah, that's happy hour.
Yeah, so there'll be a restaurant behind it. And in the Lord of Tun Tavern, at one time, it was called Peg Mullen's Beef Steak Club because it was known for the finest steak and seafood in Philadelphia, and most of the Continental Congress dined here, and they bragged about how great it was. That's why a lot of organizations like the Freemasons were founded in Tun Tavern, because it was large enough to accommodate them, and they could have large meetings and gatherings, dinners there. Society of St. George, St. Andrew's Society, Friendly Sons of St. Patrick, they all use the Tun as their meeting place. And there's some evidence that Blackbeard the Pirate also visited the Tun when he came secretly, discreetly into Philadelphia in the very early 1700s, about 1712. He was seen less than a block from here.
Get out.
Yes. So people who had seen him before were confident, that's Blackbeard. And so he may actually make an appearance at the Tun now and then to engage.
So you walk through the doors.
What do we see?
Make it look 300 years old the day it opens, but bigger. A lot of repurposed wood. The Ton will run as a full-on nonprofit. So every dollar that this raises through operations, we donate to veteran charities, to Masonic charities like Shriners Hospitals.
Amazing. So how can Philly help you get this done?
This is a full-on nonprofit. Every contribution we get is tax deductible.
Community effort.
It truly will be a community project, and it's going to bring a tremendous amount of tourist dollars that don't come here now. I can tell you as a Marine, this is Mecca. Every Marine is dying to see this place. Marines have been trying to rebuild this literally for over 100 years.
So how can we help build a dream?
Go to our website, theton.org, to help us build this or just make a donation. We will pave Ton Alley with etched bricks from donors. So you'll get the feeling that you're back in the early 1700s.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment. Back to Bridging Philly from KYW News Radio 103.9 FM.
Welcome back to Bridging Philly. Some of the rarest historical documents and artifacts in American history are housed at the American Philosophical Society, including Benjamin Franklin's personal library. Shara Day Howard takes us inside as we wrap up our Shara in the City celebration of America's 250th anniversary.
You've arrived at your destination.
This week on Shara in the City, we're at the corner of 5th and Chestnut Streets. We open it up for America's 250th, the anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence in 1776, just a couple of blocks away. And I'm heading to Benjamin Franklin's Philosophical Society Library to visit my friend Dave, a keeper of secrets, if you will. Now, this library was a labor of love for Franklin, who played such a large part in America's history. This building holds the largest collection of the most rare copies of the Declaration of Independence, even the original journals of Lewis and Clark, and really just so much more. And David's going to give us a tour and share with us American history that very few people have ever seen. This is truly a rare opportunity. Now let's go. All right, so going around the corner, so it's really easy to get lost here, but you don't want to go to the front. You want to go to the back where it says Library Entrance. Now David should be right inside the doors. He said he's going to meet us here.
Hello, how are you?
Hey, David, how are you? Introduce yourself.
Sure, my name is David Gary. I'm the Associate Director of Collections at the APS Library Museum here in Old City. So I manage the archival materials and the printed material collections for the library. We have 3.5 miles of archival material, a huge collection, all in the areas of the history of science, history of early America, and the history of Native Americans, with a special emphasis on linguistics and their languages.
Amazing. So you know what? You're going to have to take me for a drive.
Yeah.
Let's do this.
Let's go walk around. Yeah. So we have a wonderful museum as well. Our museum has about 3,000 objects in it. We're going to go see one of those objects first. It's actually in our reading room. The reading room is where our researchers are able to look at our rare manuscripts and books. All are welcome. Just all you got to do is fill out our forms and follow our rules, and you are welcome to come in.
Okay, so how old is this building?
The building here, it's made to look old, but it was finished in 1959. So the APS was given the land underneath, and then we were told, well, you have to build your own library. So we did that in the 50s when the whole park was redone. So
B-O-Y-L.
Exactly.
All right. So where are we heading now?
We're heading over here to the reading room to look at a chair, which I think you will find very interesting.
A chair? Yeah. Where?
So you're looking at a really amazing chair. Benjamin Franklin was one of our founders in 1743, so we're a 283-year-old institution. He gave us, well, we acquired his papers mostly in 1840, but more later. One of the things he gave us at his death in his will was his library chair, which we are looking at right now.
It's amazing. What is that? Mahogany. It says mahogany,
yes,
leather,
yes,
and steel rod.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the picture down there, you can see, like, you know, Franklin being Franklin, he was able to, you know, reconfigure this to have a step stool built into it. So you can actually get books higher on higher shelves.
Would expect nothing less from old Ben.
So it's really amazing. And this was a chair that our APS presidents sat in for a very long time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it has like a longer history than just Franklin.
Love it. It's gorgeous. Yeah. All right, where to next? Yeah. This place is huge.
Yeah, it's really big.
Okay, all these little secret doors.
Yeah, altogether, it's roughly 5 miles of shelving and 2 basement levels here.
Get out. So who needs a gym when you've got the library?
I do a lot of walking around.
Yeah, you do. And this looks like a vault.
Is there a vault? This is our manuscript vault. So this is all materials that are from the 18th century stored here, with some other exceptions. We have really great collections in here. If you look behind you over here, these are the Benjamin Franklin papers. This is about 70% of the known Ben Franklin papers.
The Benjamin Franklin papers. Oh my gosh, you could almost smell them in the room, and it's a little cigar.
Yeah, it's amazing. So we have all sorts of things in this space. The other thing that your listeners might like to know is we have the Lewis and Clark journals. We have 18 leather-bound volumes and then 12 fragments. So altogether, there are 30 items in that collection for us. And then we have lots of other Lewis and Clark-related material, which is also just amazing.
So you can come here and have your own Lewis and Clark adventure.
The Lewis and Clark journals are one of the items that we are pretty reluctant to bring out, but we do bring it out sometimes for exhibitions and things like that. So
very cool. Mm-hmm. All right, so what next?
Yeah, we're going to go to our rare book vault, which is at the top of the building.
Of course, the top.
We're going to take a special elevator up there. So you'll see, the building was built in the 50s. We still have that sort of 50s style elevator.
Does it get any cooler than that?
And there'll be a folding gate, real old fashioned. I'll be your doorman for today.
Alex up. Do I close this or close it?
Yeah, don't close by itself. Okay, cool. All right, so we're going to go to the top of the building. All sorts of security to get there. So this is really behind the scenes.
Yeah, you talk about hidden treasures.
So I think I said we have about 325,000 books here. I'd say in the space we're going to has about 10,000, and these are our rarest, most valuable material that needs special care.
Gosh, and the doors get heavier. Yeah. This clothes is so cool, guys. It's like we're going to the center of the earth.
Yeah. So we have wonderful, wonderful collections up here. So we put anything that was printed before 1750 into this space, and then anything after that's curator's choice. Just one collection I would point out, I think one of our greatest printed materials collections here at APS is our Thomas Paine collection. We have the largest collection of Thomas Paine printed material in the world. Completest collection, that's how I would put it. So the person who gave it to us was Richard Gimbel of Gimbel Department Store fame, New York and Philadelphia.
Gimbel's? Oh, that is so Philly.
Yeah.
So Philly.
Yeah, exactly. So Gimbel donated this collection to us in the 1970s, and he collected for decades and tried to get everything, every printing, every translation, every different edition. And he would have, so we just have huge amounts of Paine material. So if you want to study the sort of public dissemination of these, of the works of Paine, which many people do, he's a sort of, you know, the demigod of democracy, you come here to do that kind of work. So you can sort of just trace it throughout time.
So what's next?
And then we have a really huge collection of scientific material, especially natural history.
Yes.
So I'm going to show you my favorite book in the entire society. I'll
yes.
bring it over here. So come on.
And you know, if it's David's favorite, it must be pretty cool. He's a cool guy.
It is a very large book, so we're in a section here where we have oversized books. Here's a nice...
You know it's old when it's the size of your torso.
Exactly, it's huge. This book goes back really far.
It's like a book of spells. Don't be creepy.
It is a little creepy, wait till you see. A beautiful book.
It's colorful.
It's
the blues, yellows, greens, and the foreword.
So this is a book on the natural history of toads and frogs. It's the first time that a naturalist had traced the full life cycle of frogs and toads and made very beautiful engravings of them.
And it's so well illustrated. I mean, they've individually illustrated each page by hand.
Well, they certainly did do that. In this period, you would draw it first, and then someone would engrave it on a copper plate, most likely. That person had to do it backwards from the drawing, so when you printed it out, it would have to then come out, that would then come out the positive way. And then after it was printed, you would then have to hand color it. So in this instance, likely there was some sort of like a assembly line.
Yeah.
You would put the print, one person would have a section of it to manage, and you would constantly do that same section over so it was perfect.
Such talent and a labor of love, really.
Well, books take immense labor in this period, so... this is a book by Augustus Johannes Rosel von Rosenhoff. Von Rosenhoff was from Nuremberg. He was ill in the late 1750s, and he was stuck in a castle, from what I read. And he would...
Rapunzel.
Yeah, kind of. Instead of being trapped, though, he actually went around and looked at frogs for a couple years and then wrote this really amazing book.
Making good use of his time.
Yeah, exactly. Then. What I love about this book, just from as I'm a print historian, I love seeing different types of print. And here you can see at the top, we have the italic print, and then down here you have the German fractal tour. So you have these two different styles of printing on the page.
Right, all the fonts, it's so different, complete, different worlds.
And so you go into the text of the book and you got two columns, one in the italic and one in the fractur. But let me just show you here, this is amazing. So there's hand-colored pictures throughout.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, so what I like about our copy is that on the left side here, you are able to see an uncolored print. This is what it would have looked like when it came off the plate right away. And then on the right side here, just opposite, you would be able to see, you're able to see that the color makes a difference. This would have been a hand-colored item. Probably by women. It would have been a woman's job for in a lot of cases.
Is the coloring. Okay, yeah, that's gorgeous. And you can see it's an action shot.
Yeah, exactly.
They're eating, jumping, hanging out, having the brunch.
Yeah. And they're really rich and very beautiful. So it's just, I don't know, it's unexpected. That's why I like the book so much.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. A lot of little surprises.
Yeah, exactly. And it came to us in the 1830s from one of our APS members, so it has this really cool provenance and story. Real treasures all around, yeah.
Yeah, and people don't get that Philadelphia is really a quiet mecca of rare books.
I've always been able to find any book I've wanted to look at in Philadelphia. It's unbelievable. It's a great mecca here.
So talk about talents and trends. That's what we do here too.
Yeah, the libraries here are wonderful.
So if people want to come to the library and get a sneak peek, get a one-on-one, how do they do it?
Yeah, come to the library. We'd love to see you there. We have an exhibit in our lobby. We're at 105 South 5th Street at the corner of Library Street and 5th Street.
And the coolest thing right now, what's on exhibit?
It's called These Truths, the Declarations of Independence. So we're focusing on the many different copies that were made over the first 50 years.
Like, guys, come on. You got to check it out. Let's go.
Thank you for joining us. Bridging Philly is brought to you by Gift of Life Donor Program. Register as an organ donor at donorsone.org. For more information on Bridging Philly, follow KYW News Radio on social media. And if you have any ideas for interesting features that you'd like to share, feel free to get in touch with us at bridgingphilly@kywnewsradio.com. For Sharaday Howard and our producer Sabrina Boyd-Circa, I'm Raquel Williams. Be well.